What's up, everybody? Welcome to the PFF College Football Podcast. I'm your host, Seth Galina. On today's episode, I talked to a real-life college football quarterback. His name is Dustin Crum. He is the starting quarterback for the Kent State football team. And so we talked about, you know, his history, you know, when did he start playing quarterback, when did he know he was going to be a pretty good quarterback, and talked about his offense, his very unique offense, kind of like a super spreader type of offense. And so we talked about that stuff and how the running game helps him. You know, he's a very good runner with the football, running a lot of power counter stuff. So really interesting discussion with him. And then right afterwards, me and Anthony Tresh talked about the top 10 returning defensive linemen on the edge, top 10 defensive linemen in the interior coming back to college football next season. So anyways, here you go. Here's an interview with Dustin Crum, quarterback of the Kent State football team. I now welcome PFF's first team All-MAC quarterback, Mr. Dustin Crum, to the podcast. Dustin, how's it going?
Good, good. Thanks for having me on.
So let's get into it like right away. I'm curious about your history of playing the quarterback position. Did you, like when you were playing like Pop Warner, Little League, whatever it's called, where you are, was it something where like from day one, you were throwing a football and this was, you were going to play quarterback, or did you, was it some, I played outside linebacker when I was in like Pee Wee, right? So like, was it something where it was right away you were quarterback, or did you fall into it later?
Offensively, I was pretty much quarterback almost from day one. I want to say like maybe second or third grade, I played running back most of the time. And then like from fourth grade on, I was all quarterback, but like you said, defensively, I was always playing defense too. So I was outside linebacker, safety, and even played a little bit in high school and everything. So honestly, until I really got maybe the eighth or ninth grade, I didn't know which side of the ball I was really going to be playing on or focusing on mostly.
Okay. So when did you realize like, okay, I'm all right at this quarterback thing. I can make a D1 career out of it.
I wouldn't say I knew I was a D1 guy or anything like that, I guess, that early on. But I would say probably in around seventh or eighth grade, or maybe even sixth grade, honestly, when we were kind of, I realized when I was playing quarterback, we were actually throwing the ball quite a bit more than most teams. I mean, at that age, most teams are really primarily running the ball and everything. We would throw it a lot more. So I guess I kind of understood at that point that I was a little bit, I guess, ahead of the competition. But I mean, honestly, I didn't pick up my first offer till my senior year. So I didn't, and then I didn't really start till my sophomore year, and didn't know until the first game my sophomore year of high school if I was going to be a starter or not. So I didn't have anything set up for me, I guess, in that way where I knew, I guess, I could get to where I am now. But I mean, I would say early on, I kind of had at least an idea.
Were you always, I mean, so, you know, watching your tape, there's a lot of like quarterback design runs. Was that always part of your game, even in high school?
Yeah. I would definitely say I've always enjoyed running the ball. Like I said, I played defense growing up, and my dad was a coach, and my brother played as well. And I would honestly say they're much more defensively minded guys. So always kind of loved the physicality of the game. I mean, even though as a quarterback, obviously you have to protect yourself and stuff, but I wouldn't say I'm one to shy away from contact, even though I'm not one of the bigger guys in the field.
Yeah. It's not just like zone read type stuff. Not that there's anything wrong with zone read where like, but you're the quarterback being kind of like the outside runner. I mean, this is like inverted veer, power read, like you're hitting the hole, man. Like you're getting dirty with it. And it's actually fun to watch. You're also just a good scrambler. I mean, you're making plays, you know, if nothing's there down the field, you're making a lot of plays. So it's a really, really important part of your game. I also think just that aspect of your team's offense, and we'll get to that in a bit, you being able to do all that stuff opens up so much when you guys want to do gaining explosive plays down the field. But before we go on, I just wanted to, you know, put out some numbers here because you and the offense you're playing in at Kent State has been just lethal the past couple of years. So you are the eighth highest graded quarterback in college football over the last two seasons, 92.0, incredible. In 2019, Kent State's offense was 38th in EPA per play, which is very good. In 2020, just behind Alabama at number two in EPA per play. So we're, you know, for people who don't know, I mean, this is one of college football's top offenses going into 2021. You're back for another season. One of the things that I was curious about is you changed from number 14 to number seven. What's the deal with that? The athletes' numbers are very important. So I'm curious about that.
I actually been 14 my entire life, but that's kind of one of our head coach, Coach Lewis. It's one of his things. Being a single digit guy is kind of, I guess, like an honor in our program. So it's kind of, I wouldn't say it's being like named a captain, but like it's kind of, if you're one of those guys on the team, they give you a single digit. So that's kind of what that was. And I mean, I wouldn't say I had a choice in it or anything, but definitely not something I wanted to turn down. It meant a lot to me.
That's great. I was curious about when you go watch the NFL or you watch, you know, other college football quarterbacks, like who are the guys that either you look at now or when you were growing up at the quarterback position that you try and emulate?
Growing up, I would always say I've been a big college football fan over the NFL. And growing up, my guy was Colt McCoy, actually. I loved watching him play. I was a Texas fan up in Ohio. Honestly, nowadays, I would say I try to pull as much as I can from different people. I mean, pick out little pieces of their game and just try to implement it if I can. So, I mean, I watch a handful of guys. I mean, some of obviously the greats to do it in Breeze and Brady, and then just some of the really good ones now with Mahomes and Allen and Watson and all those guys. So, like I said, I just try to pick little pieces here and there from different guys.
Is there anything specific? I mean, maybe you don't have to get into this, but is there anything specific that you decided to work on this off season, whether it's with your mechanics, with eyes, or what is that one thing or a couple things that you're working on?
I would say probably my couple biggest things is 2019 with all the numbers and everything. I'm sure you obviously seen our deep ball efficiency was kind of one of the best in the country. And that's something that we kind of just do in the off season. People think it kind of just happens, but we really get that through reps and timing in the off season. And with COVID last year, we didn't get to do that. And there was a big drop in it. So getting that back up to where it was. And then I would say I would probably say pocket presence, probably my next biggest thing I wanted to work on.
Yeah. The deep ball stuff was like, when I watched your tape from last year, it's like, it's just off by like, a centimeter every time. And you're still putting up great numbers. That's the crazy thing. And it kind of leads me to my next question, because, you know, the offense you play in, you have a lot of, so I call it, I don't think I coined this, but I stole it from someone. You know, you're part of these offensive schemes in college football that I would call like the super spreader offense. So you guys are wide, and oh my God, I have the numbers. You guys were the number three widest team in college football last year in terms of on pass plays. I think your average formational width was 36 yards, and UCF was number one at like 39 yards. So like you guys are as wide as you can possibly be. Your receivers are talking to like the other team's coaches on the sideline, basically. So like with that, you're getting all these kind of vertical option routes, right? You know, stem vertically to however, I don't know however you guys teach it, and then make a decision. So that's kind of what I was going to ask you, is like, how do you get on the same page with your receivers? Cause you don't know in a sense where they're going to be pre-snap.
Yeah. It's a lot, like I said, it's a lot of timing and just a total reps and putting in the hours, and you have to have a good understanding of coverages and things like that. And you have to have, like you said, guys you can really just trust. I mean, I would honestly say, I mean, in some of those things you talked about earlier in the different kind of run game we do, I would honestly say we do a lot more than most teams that go fast. I think that's something that makes us unique and different, is that although we go fast, I mean, we're reading coverages, we're reading fronts, box structures. I mean, even though we're not pro style, whatever you want to call it, I mean, we're still technically identifying Mike and all that and a lot of our different things we do. So I think we're very versatile in that way. And I think that's kind of what makes us a little different.
Well, I think like being able to, like you said, identify the mic and get yourself into like right protections is super important, because you got to take that extra, that some quarterbacks don't have that extra little like half second to understand what your receiver is about to run, right? Whether he's going to get on top or not. But I did feel like, so that is like, I'd say a big part of your offense, But I did feel like when you talk about certain pro style concepts, let's say, you did a really good job of getting to the backside receiver in a lot of times. So like, you know, if you're running some sort of, I don't know, some sort of smash concept, whatever type of smash concept you want on the front side, and you would have something coming into your vision on the backside. I think you did a really good job of not forcing anything to the front side, coming back, finding that route. For me, that's like the hardest thing to do playing quarterback. That's why I throw many interceptions in my flag football team. But so I'm curious, like, when it comes to like reading defense, like what is a quarterback, you know, you're playing D1, you're one of the top quarterbacks in the country. Like, what are you seeing? Are you seeing like blurs of colors? Are you seeing hip angles? Like what is taking you from one read to another?
I would say the most important thing for me, and I mean, like I said, with the speed of our offense and how fast we go, you got to be able to process quick. And I would say the biggest thing for me is preparation, knowing certain tells and things that defenses will do to give you away. And because different teams will have different alignments, they'll cheat different things in different ways, so you know it's going to come. And just, I mean, overall structure, honestly, true. Once you kind of get an ideal and feel as the game goes on, is the way the safeties, when they're rotating, when they're going to do that, if they're wider for a certain reason. I mean, you can tell a lot. I mean, defenses, they're going to have to play a lot more honest against us with how fast we go, like I said. And you can tell a lot kind of alignments, just picking out land markers, for example, the free safety, if he's outside the hash, on the hash, like he's going to have to cheat somewhere or do something. And then it just, they're all tied on a string from there. I mean, then you can just work through it and then focus honestly on wherever you need to focus for a certain play, if you're just trying to get the ball and snap it or whatever. But I mean, honestly, it's like I said, it's a lot of preparation for me. That's kind of what it comes down to.
Do you have, so like during the week, what is your, how much time do you divide into, let's say, what you just did on the field, like on the Saturday or Friday, or for you guys, I guess, Tuesday sometimes. And then like, is that like just in and out, like, okay, this happened, it's over, let me get to the next team? Or do you really try and focus on, like, where's the balance there in terms of preparation?
I would say it's just the one day after, and we'll come in Sunday. If it's a Saturday game, like I said, we'll come in Sunday and that's that, and we're moved on. And honestly, sometimes we start even on Sunday for the next team, and then throughout the week, we'll break it up kind of situationally a little bit, maybe focused on just overall coverage tendencies for first and second down, and then maybe later in the week, focus on third down tendencies and certain blitzes they might have that are unique or different things like that, different tells, all of that.
Right. Okay. And like, what do you think is the best, like right now, like next year you should be drafted in the NFL. Like, what do you think is the best part of your game right now?
I would probably say accuracy. And then I would probably put that along with kind of just decision-making and mentally. I mean, like I said, we do really everything. As you pointed out in the run game, we really do pretty much everything. And then even in our passing game, we're pretty much reading stuff on the fly and we're doing it at a very fast pace. And then run game, like you said, reading pretty much every kind of run you could imagine, and have to have a true understanding of run scheme and box structures and all that to do that. And then just accuracy and taking care of the ball, something I pride myself a lot in. I mean, obviously turnover margin is huge for any winning and losing a game and all of that. So those are probably my two biggest things.
Yeah. I wanted to add, like, you talk about going no huddle, you guys are like lights out fast. And you, like, you know, when I'm, cause I, you know, I get the coach's film. So like when I'm watching that and like every snap, the umpire, the referee is still in his back pedal trying to get out from like putting the ball down. Like, you know, when that's happening, you are going at lightning speed. Yeah. You take care of the football as well as anyone. I think that's like six interceptions in your whole career so far. There were two, like, I don't know, we don't want to get into its negatives here, but there were, like, out of all the plays that I watched, from last year, I mean, only four games, but there were, I think, maybe two plays that I was like, I'm sure you wanted those two back. I think it was like a double slants against, I don't remember, early in the season. And then I think you threw a pick on one of your glance routes there. like the backside, like defensive end came across, or the backside safety. But like besides that, like you're like, and that's why you guys are the number two rated offense in the country. Like you're not putting the ball in harm's way ever, really. So like, is that, again, does that come from so much preparation? Are you, do you feel like maybe going into next year, like, do you think you should take more chances? Like, yeah, they might lead to interceptions, but I was okay. Like, I don't know. Like, where do you feel like that?
It's a combination of things. I mean, it's a accuracy thing, not missing, easy throws. I think a lot of times, a lot of interceptions will come off of high balls, come off receivers' hands, stuff like that, different things. Like I said, just some, kind of preparation work with the receivers, kind of being on the same page and all of that. And I think a lot of times in the deep ball game is knowing how to throw it and kind of when to throw it. I feel like a lot of deep balls that get picked off are not necessarily because they're bad shots or bad chances. I think a lot of people leave balls inside or try to throw back shoulders or something like that. And that's something we don't do at all. I mean, if you watch any of our vertical passing game, we're going to put it over the top. We're not going to really try to throw back shoulder balls or anything like that. So I think that protects us a lot from all of that. So it's not that we're not taking the shots. It's just that we're taking them in different ways. And as I mean, our coach calls them calculated risks. So that's kind of the way we look at it per se.
Yeah. The deep ball stuff. So I keep underthrowing my deep balls because my feet suck. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. My feet, I can't set my feet properly or whatever. But when I watch you, it's like you're never going to have that problem. And you put a lot of energy. Like I see your throwing motion. You put a lot of energy going forward. It's like a very linear path. Like you're putting that ball over the top. Is that something you've always done? Is something that changed when you got there? Or, you know, we're working with quarterback coach, offensive coordinator, or is that something you've always done?
I would say it's been kind of our offense. I mean, since Coach Lewis has been here, that's just kind of the way he coaches our footwork and our offense. And that's just kind of the timing that's developed for our route. And I mean, to be honest with you, it's at this point, I've done it so many times. It's something that you kind of almost just can do in your sleep. I mean, if you can't throw it the exact same timing every time, I mean, to be honest with you, we even have it down to the exact yardage every deep ball should be completed. I mean, it doesn't even matter. And so it's to the point where it's so meticulous. I mean, it's the reason you can get consistent results.
Yeah. It's like your offense is one of these, it's kind of like a cliche now, but it's like do a few things, but do them at a super high level. And that's really what you guys are doing. I mean, I saw mesh twice. I saw something like that, but the things you do, it's a weird sentence. The things you do, are just like at an elite level. I mean, no one can stop you guys. Your screen game is nasty. All these middle screens and your receivers are great too. It's like one of the most fun offenses that I've had a chance to watch. It almost felt like I was looking at my, I was like watching it on Huddle and I was like, am I in like double speed here? Like, am I crazy? You guys are, your receivers are getting so much yak for you and you're putting the ball in the right places. So I was curious. So you guys had that very short 4-game season, unfortunately, last year. In 2019, you guys played two Power 5 teams, Arizona State, Wisconsin. Didn't go so well. However, you guys got a tough schedule going into 2021. Three Power 5 teams, starting with Texas A&M. How excited are you, kind of like a chance to like redeem yourself and be like, okay, look, it didn't go so well, and you know, at in Tempe or whatever the hell they play, you know, in Madison, but we're going to College Station. And we're going to shock the world. Like you get that, is that an exciting feeling for you guys, like getting close to camp?
Yeah, I mean, I would say, honestly, it's just, whatever the result is, really, it's just a chance to prove yourself. I mean, you're playing one of the better teams in the country, and I just look at it as like a proving ground, to be honest with you. I mean, I would honestly say that Wisconsin game was probably one of the poorer games we've played in an offense since we've been here. So obviously that's kind of was the last time we've had a Power 5 game. And then that year before that, I wasn't even truly playing for Arizona State. And then we played Auburn as well that year. We actually played pretty well against Auburn and moved the ball up and down the field a little bit on them early on in the game. We just didn't finish those drives. So I mean, personally, I just remember kind of that feeling in that Auburn game. And being on the field with those guys, and that was the year they had all those D linemen and probably had the best D line in the country, and just being able to gas them up and just put a long drive on them. It just, I mean, you knew when we executed, we could really move the ball on anybody in the country, and to have that kind of feeling and that confidence was huge. And I think that's something, if we can do that to A&M and establish that early in the season, that will really carry throughout the rest of the year.
It feels like you guys, and since Coach Lewis has gotten there, has really been on the ascent. And I guess this is the year you guys are talking about, not just, you know, scalping a Power Five team, but like getting it done in conference. Like, is that something you guys talk about too, or is it one game at a time?
I mean, it's definitely one of our goals. I mean, Coach Lewis came here. I mean, he set the goals high, and he made them pretty clear. I mean, our rivalry game, graduate guys, win our division, win our conference, and go to a New Year's Six bowl. So, I mean, that's kind of the goals he set for us, and he set them high, and that's like kind of what we're always aiming at.
I just wanted to get back into the scheme stuff just for a second. I'm curious about – I went to Army – like 2 years ago for like a clinic or something. And it's really interesting to talk to those guys because they run obviously a very unique offense. Yeah. And so when they're trying to game plan, they go through many hoops to try and figure out what a team is going to do to them. And like they're talking, one of the guys was like, yeah, well, like if we know that, you know, he was like, hey, they were playing like Oklahoma 1 year, this was a few years ago. And they're like, oh, well, their linebacker coach used to be the DC at this, you know, one like FCS school, and they played against like Georgia Southern. So we'll go look at that tape. And I'm comparing it to you guys. You guys aren't as like the triple option teams like that is very unique, but you guys are pretty unique too. So I'm wondering if there's stuff on tape that you're like, you know, like we watched this team play last week, and like, can we actually take anything from that? Yeah. Or do you guys find enough in a weekly game plan to take from?
I would honestly say it's a little bit of both. Like you said, honestly, we've had pretty much almost exact same situations where we'll watch if that defensive coordinator was somewhere else, or if he was at that school and there was an offense from maybe the year before that ran something similar to us, we'll go and study that game for sure, like you said. And then if we do watch the week before, if it's not really pertinent to our offense, we'll go and just study it for kind of more personnel purposes and things like that. But I mean, definitely, I mean, I think it was actually, it's kind of funny you mentioned that. I think Coach Lewis said he coached against this guy when he was at Syracuse and he was the DC at Wake Forest or something. We were watching A&M like a month or so ago when we started studying them. So it was kind of funny. So, I mean, now we're probably going to pull that game up and see how we called it and all that kind of stuff. So it's kind of cool that you mentioned that. Kind of, it is pretty relevant. It happens a lot, honestly.
All right. Mr. Dustin Crum, I appreciate this tremendously. This was a great talk. Hope for the best for you guys. Obviously hope for the championship, hope for a big upset and a week one against Texas A&M, and I hope you have a great season and onwards to the NFL later.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
In these uncertain times, life is full of questions like, when should I start thinking about life insurance? But however difficult these questions may be, Western and Southern can help you answer them. Backed by over 130 years of experience, together we can look ahead to leave the unknown behind. Western and Southern Financial Group, life insurance, retirement, and investments. Compensated endorser, products issued by member companies of Western and Southern Financial Group, Cincinnati, Ohio. Did you guys know right now on PFF.com, because fantasy football season is here, you can get 40% off with promo code SAVE40 off any PFF subscription to all first-time subscribers. So that's SAVE40, you know, one word. You get access to PFF's fantasy football draft guide, complete with our player rankings and projections. You get the college football preview magazine written by me and Anthony Tresh. You get the first edition of the 2022 NFL draft guide. That's Mike Renner's baby, and all of PFF's locked overall article content. Again, that's promo code SAVE40 for 40% off any PFF subscription. And then with that, you can get access to PFF's fantasy tools for $5.99. All right, I am now joined by Mr. Anthony Tresh. We have gone through all the offensive units, quarterback, receiver, tackles, interior offensive line, running back, tight ends. We move on to the dark side. We are going to talk about the PFF's top 10 returning defensive linemen on the edge and defensive linemen on the interior. Actually, we're going to go top five for each group, and then we're going to run through like kind of the sleeper picks that we have to round out those groups. So let's start on the edge because I think it's a very interesting class. A lot of different, I guess for both the interior and the exterior, a lot of different body types that are doing very different things with those body types to get to the quarterback. So it's always fun to watch different guys have different plans and stuff to get to the quarterback. So let's go top five edge rushers returning in college football. Number one, Nick Bonino, kind of out of nowhere, I would say, after a really great 2020 season out of Oklahoma.
Yeah, I mean, this dude, like, he pretty much, like, broke our grading scale. I mean, he pops up in literally every single metric, and I'm happy we started with an edge because this group's so much more exciting than the interior group. I mean, we're going to have, obviously, a ton of breakouts there. That's going to happen. But as far as, like, established returning production, this edge group, this edge list, making it, I hated it because it was so difficult. I remember sending him to you, talking over, and it's like, there could be, like, 10 other guys in this top 10. But Nick Bonino, he had a 93.6 pass rush grade this past year. He led everybody in the FBS in that pass rush win rate, pressure rate. I mean, he's explosive and a great athlete. And I don't think there is a tackle in the Big 12 that can really contain him. I just think he's going to be the same kind of person that's causing headaches for every single offensive lineman he faces up until the college football playoff. And I think when you have that secondary that Oklahoma has, which is, there's some positive pieces there. I'm not going to say they're complete garbage. You know, I like DJ Graham. I think he's a rising cornerback, but it's not like the cream of the crop, right? You need a potent pass rush, and Nick Bonino leads the charge there. And what is probably the best pass rush in college football?
Yeah, and they actually get back an interior defensive lineman named Jalen Redmond, who we're going to talk about in a second. So all of a sudden, you're pairing him, Bonino, who got after the quarterback at an incredible rate. I did feel like a lot of stuff was a little bit schemed up for him. So I'm kind of curious to see if he can do that. Like if he can do this again, if it's just more of a one hit wonder type of season, if he can do it again. But if he does, I mean, he's a top 15 pick probably in the draft next year. So he pairs with, you know, a three tech that they have that's coming back, who opted out. Jalen Redmond, who's coming back. So that could be a really interesting defense. And I think it's kind of one of the reasons why you like Oklahoma to get back to the college football playoff and maybe make some noise in it. Let's go to number two, Kayvon Thibodeau out of Oregon. Probably the guy, he hasn't graded as well as maybe we would have liked after 2 years at Oregon. However, you put the tape on, it's disgusting. Like he just has everything you want. And he definitely got better as the season went on, had some really great grades as, in the USC game. And then I think they played Iowa State in the bowl game. So he looks really good. He has everything, right? The power, the speed, to really have a huge season in his third year now at Oregon.
Yeah. I mean, if we're talking like draft perspective, and again, like these top 10 returning players, nothing new with the draft. If we're talking draft perspective, this guy's number one, 100%.
He could be the number one overall pick. Like it depends on like quarterback situation for whoever has that pick, but could be the number one overall pick.
Exactly. 100%. I mean, this guy, if you were building the perfect pass rusher, and I think I did this last year, I don't even know if I ended up writing it, but you know, I should have gone back and did it this year, you know, building the perfect player at every position, right? You look at the quarterback, get all those traits, you know, who's the best in each category. Edge defender, Kayvon Thibodeau makes a case for almost damn near every single one. He is that special of a player. He just doesn't have that Chase Young type of production yet. But you watch that USC game, like you're talking about, the dude, 12 pressures against Elijah Vera Tucker, a first round pick in the 2021 NFL draft. I mean, this guy is a real deal. Again, I mentioned this before. I probably said it like five times when I've appeared on your podcast here. But at that Ohio State game, that's one of my favorite matchups I'm most looking forward to, because I think that's when we're going to find out a lot about some of these guys. And I think, you know, these are NFL caliber players. And I mean, this is, he should be, from a traits perspective, he is number one. but he's number two here just because he doesn't have quite the production that Nick Bonino had out this past year, which is better than anybody else.
Number three, DeMarvin Leal from Texas A&M. He's more of a...
This is my favorite guy.
Yeah, he's big, man. And he's big, he's thicker. He gets after the quarterback with more power, but he does have a really nice inside move I found too. He's just a low 10. He's fighting to get to the quarterback every play, just a real load to deal with if you're a tackle in the SEC this year.
Yeah, man. He was also, I thought he, like from a technical perspective, I thought he improved a lot this past season. And I think he's taking more strides there. And I thought he had one of the more underrated, because if you post up an 80.0 plus grade as both a run defender and a pass rusher, going up against only SEC offensive lines, that's special. And he ragdolled some of those guys. I mean, you watched that Florida game. It was nasty. And I know Florida's not the cream of the crop. Some of those linemen aren't. But, I mean, he was legitimate, a power guy. He's just going to be a force in 2021. I'm excited to see. And I think, too, I mean, you look at Texas A&M, I kind of think that defensive front, I don't want to put them up against Oklahoma. But as far as, you know, potential, they definitely have it because they have some intriguing guys along that front. Jaden Peavy, interior defender. I really like what he brings to the table as well. In that defense as a whole, they return a lot of talent that they're going to be, you know, one of our top returning defenses in 2021. If only they had a quarterback. That's the only thing with Texas A&M. If they just had a freaking quarterback, it'd be a damn good team. But, you know, I've heard some people, I've been asked the question multiple times, you know, is this year Texas A&M gets to the playoff? Yeah, I'm taking quarterback out of the equation. They have the roster, but they don't have the quarterback. And if you don't have the quarterback, I'm sorry, you're just not getting there. And that, again, that's what I keep saying about this college football season. Look at all the new starters we're welcoming in. Look how many established, you know, top-notch players we have. Now, not a lot of those, but a lot of, you know, newly implemented starters. So it's going to be making, you know, for a very fun college football season. A lot more uncertain one at that.
Yeah, for me, Texas A&M is like uncertain at the quarterback position, and we're getting off topic here, but just because, you know, obviously you'd feel pretty good if you had like Kellen Mond coming back for like a fucking 18th year or whatever, but like at least you could, there's hope if you're like an Aggie fan, like you just don't know what you're going to get from King. I think it's King and Calzada, the two guys who are vying for that top spot. You just don't know. So it's like, yeah, either of them could be better than Kellen Mond, because Kellen Mond is not like the greatest quarterback in the world, even though I love Kellen Mond. But you could also get worse play than that. And then if you get worse play than that, you're just not making the playoff. You're probably losing a couple of games. So I would be cautiously optimistic, because obviously, like you said, the roster is there at almost every position or every unit. They got talent there, but we just don't know a lot. I think with one of them now, I'm forgetting who is who with those two quarterbacks, but one of them is a pretty nifty runner. So maybe you could get away with, hey, maybe we don't have this greatest passer, but we can create some sort of offense where we're using the kid, I want to say King, as a running threat, and then we can kind of get away with maybe less polished passers behind center. But anyways, we're getting off topic. Let's go back to the edge class. Number four, Aiden Hutchinson out of Michigan, was I was really hoping that we got a full year out of Hutchinson last year, because after the Minnesota game, I mean, he was unblockable in that game. Just heavy, pushing tackles back into the quarterback. And then obviously we only got like three games out of him, but a really high PFF grade. And so I'm super excited to see what he can do, you know, if he's healthy going into 2020 season. I thought he looked better than Kwity Paye or a lot for like most of his career, both of their careers. So I'm excited to see what he can do another year at Michigan.
Yeah, man, 100%. I always thought that he was, you know, I was a big Kwity Paye guy as well, but I mean, I always thought Aiden Hutchinson, he was the better of the two players, and I thought he was going to be the better player in the long run. He only played really three games this past season. But, you know, looking back at what he did in 2019, I mean, this guy, he's a real deal. I mean, like you said, he's just a powerful dude. So much power behind his hands. He's versatile and just one of the more polished players in the position, really good against the run. I'm excited to see, you know, really see what he can do this upcoming season, especially against, you know, the Big Ten. It's not, you know, and I wouldn't say any offensive line right now we can definitively say is going to be super elite. You know, you look at all the top returning offensive lines, I think each and every single one has a question mark just because there was a lot of rotation in there. but they are a lot of potential upside ones in the Big Ten that I'm excited to see him go up against.
Okay, number five, Mijay Sanders, Cincinnati, or Mijay Sanders, Cincinnati. Lanky, tall, you know, 6'5", just speed and just so fast. Got good hands, but really he's using his quickness and his speed to get, and his athleticism to get around the corner. Super, probably the most fun player to watch because it's aesthetically super pleasing, I would say, to watch because of that size. And then he gets after the quarterback.
Yeah, well, exactly. Exactly. That last point, he had four more pressures in all but one game this past season. The one game he didn't get three. Yeah, you don't really see that for, I don't care if it's group of five, power five, you don't see that very often. And that's why he had an elite pass rushing grade for the year. Like you said, he's a speed rusher. Short area quicks. He's got the length. He's just such a good player. And when you put him against some of the American offensive linemen, it's no match. You know, I would like to see him get more work against power five offensive linemen, obviously. Especially those draft guys, that's what they want to see most of all. But you know, this guy, I think he's a special player on the Cincinnati offensive line or defensive line. That's why he's coming here, first group of five defensive linemen off the board.
Well, they get Notre Dame, if I'm not mistaken, early October or something. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking up their schedule right now, but I believe they have another pretty tough game.
We get Indiana,
right.
Better than AAC offensive line. But no, Notre Dame's going to be interesting. I'm still curious to see what's going to happen with Jarrett Patterson. I mean, like I said before, I'm fairly certain that he wants to stick at center, but the Notre Dame coaching staff wants him at tackle. We'll see who wins up at the end, but Notre Dame's going to have, it doesn't matter where he plays. It's going to be a tough matchup. It's just an O-line factor. They're turning out up there.
Yeah, and that's like we think we talked about this last time on the podcast, but how excited we are for that game because you get Cincinnati playing against their old defensive coordinator Marcus Freeman early in the season. So very excited to see how that plays out. So let me just run through before we get to the interior defensive line class, 6 through 10. If you have thoughts on any of these guys, let me know. Number 6, Will Anderson Jr. from Alabama. Number 7, Zion Tupuola Fetui from Washington. Number 8, Demetrius Taylor, App State. Number 9, Tyreek Smith, Ohio State. Number 10, Brenton Cox Jr., Florida. And one guy that you said to watch out for, Drake Jackson, USC.
Yeah, so a few thoughts there. Zion, I was very saddened for him. Ruptured his Achilles, so he won't be playing this upcoming season. I thought he was a guy with so much potential just because he was one of those kind of smaller sample size darlings, but I thought he kind of proved himself enough on that small sample that he's the real deal. And I thought he was going to really break out and become like a household name, unique name at that, that would, you know, get a lot of attention. But, you know, I thought he was a special type of player. So hopefully he can come back from that injury. Will Anderson, I'm really excited about this kid. He true freshman this past season. You know, he did lead the FBS in pressures, did play, you know, rush the passer more than anyone else. But at the end of the day, you look at those pressure rates, still very high. He has the flexibility, he has the bend. He's such a raw player too. He has so much room to grow, just really scratching the surface of what he can become. Drake Jackson, he's an enigma, man. And you look at, and again, this is when I always say, don't just because the draft, you know, people that are looking ahead to next year's draft, like this guy does not mean he's an elite pass rusher right now. If I recall correctly, he only made our honorable mention preseason Pac-12 team. But you look at, you know, from a traits perspective, I think you can put him in that top 10 elite category. But production, nowhere to be seen. He has all the traits you could want, all the tools, but he just has no refinement to his game yet. He can get there. There's no doubt about that. So that's why he's there at the one more name to watch. But I have a couple more. Adam Anderson. That guy, he's been.
That's my guy. I was going to say.
I'll let you talk about him.
No. He's just a solid player, both against the run and the pass. Just excited to see him grow, like just get a little bit more, maybe a little more twitchiness, if that possible. But he's a hell of a player. I like watching him.
Yeah. A bigger sample too, more opportunities to rush the passer. Boye Mafe, he's one of my. You know, I don't want to call him like a conviction breakout. He was on our breakouts list. But again, you look at how many times he's actually played, he kind of qualifies in that area. He made Bruce Feldman's freaks list. His explosiveness is off the charts. He's got a great get off. I think he's going to be a stud, finally getting a full length season as a starter on Minnesota's defensive line. That's definitely, I think you, even offense defense, hands down their best player returning, even ahead of Chris Ottman-Bell. I think that guy has a chance to be really special. But I mean, I could keep going because this edge group next year, I mean, it's such a talented one. And I'm really excited to see some of these people emerge.
I'll add Allie Gay from LSU, because I think, well, I just think like, regardless of production, you're going to get a guy who's, people are going to love him because of the size. He's huge, you know, wingspan and everything, height, wingspan, the whole thing, gets after the quarterback. So I think people are going to fall in love with Allie Gay, and especially if LSU's defense is not the dumpster fire that it was last year, then he'll get more chances to get after the quarterback if they can actually cover someone in the slot. So
it, we were talking too, I mean, with Allie Gay and, you know, Ojulari there, Mike Jones. Yeah. I mean, you were pulling up the disappointing LSU numbers that I think kind of depressed you for a second, but you know, they just have so much talent there to be a special group. You know, we'll see if they can actually put that in action.
Yeah, so what Anthony's talking about is we were trying to rank the top 10 kind of defenses going into the season, like as units, as full units. And we just didn't know where to put LSU, because we look at it and we see all the talent there. But we remember last year was not good at all, even with good talent. Obviously, they had lost so many players from the 2019 team, but it wasn't good. And then even the 2019 team had its issues. Ole Miss game, Texas game, you know, all wins by LSU, but the Ole Miss game, Texas game, obviously they allowed points to Alabama and so on and so forth. So, you know, LSU's defense has been shaky for a couple of years. So it's like, yeah, the talent is tremendous there, you know, at corner and at edge especially, but can they put it together after 2 years of kind of being middling?
Here's my, I'm going to try and convince you here, and we'll see what when the people go to pff.com to read the article, we'll see who ends up winning this debate. So, I mean, you look at Derek Stingley Jr. and Eli Ricks. 2019, Derek Stingley Jr., best true freshman season ever by a cornerback that we've seen in the PFF college era, best true freshman season ever in the PFF college era. Eli Ricks, he was the fourth best true freshman season we've ever seen by a Power 5 cornerback this past season. I think if you have those two back and healthy, and Derek Stingley Jr., I think he only gave up like 7 first downs last year. It was 6, and 3 of them came in that Missouri game when he got hurt after the fact. I think if you have those two fully healthy on the outside, you're adding Mike Jones Jr., who I think is hands down the best off-ball coverage linebacker in college football. Very good blitz weapon too. And then you get growth from BJ Ojulari. He's interesting too. You look at those first five games, he was already an elite player pretty much, but then he was nothing. He was non-existent those last 5 games, but he showed it. He showed he can actually do it. Allie Gay too. I mean, he was up there above 80.0 in the past with his pass rushing. I just think, you know, there's no way they can rank, you know, where they did, you know, they were like what, 68th against in EPA per pass allowed. There's no way that happens again. If they do, then there is a huge, huge problem with the way they're executing their defense, because there's so much talent there for them not to be good. And I think, the slot coverage was a big problem last year, but it was so bad that it can't be that bad again.
Yeah, even in 2019, I felt the slot coverage was a bit of a problem. All right, let's move on to interior defensive players, starting with Haskell Garrett from Ohio State. Also, one of the things that I love, three techniques are getting so smart, Like, I know the history of three techniques, but like, you see a lot of them, the good ones just understand that the guards aren't good pass protectors, right? Generally. So what ends up happening is guards are so nervous, especially when they see a good three tech in front of them with some athleticism, that they're going to overset. And the center, like if you're in like a, you know, generally you're going to see teams with, if you have a three tech, then on the opposite side, you have a one tech. So he's going to attract the attention of the center and the backside guard, which means you can get a one-on-one. And if he's going to overset, you could just bang an inside move all day. And you see that on Haskell Garrett's tape, and you see it with a few other guys. Like, they're just going to, like, you're going to overset if you're a guard, and he's going to bang you inside for that inside move. And he's going to get to the quarterback. Not that he doesn't have outside moves. He's number one, you know, returning interior defensive lineman. He's got all the moves. I find him a pretty complete player, but you see that with some of the better three techs. Like, they understand how guards are just, they don't have the feet that tackles do. And interior players are becoming so much better going to all these pass rush camps and all that stuff that they can get you, man, if you're not ready for that.
Yeah, I mean, you see it too when you get some of these versatile guys that, you know, they're all over the map. You know, they're taking advantage of that. With Haskell Garrett too, I was shocked to hear just cause some of the backlash, because apparently we're the only people that think Haskell Garrett's like I would say he's an elite player. Even Ohio State people, yeah, even Ohio State people were like, hey, I think it's Zach Harrison or I think it's Tyreek Smith. I was like, Haskell Garrett's the best player on the defensive line, even though those two guys are great. I think he was the only one that was kind of sniffing that Christian Barmore-esque type of dominance. And I think he was being underrated too. And I think enough people saw that kind of comparison and they kind of, you know, were standoffish there, but you know, he's just a force of nature. You know, he's got heavy hands. I think he's the real deal. And I think it's almost like the Oklahoma thing. That defensive front is so good that I think it's going to prevent that defense from being just good enough. And the offense is going to have to carry them the rest of the way, because that secondary, I just can't buy into it. I can't at all. And we'll talk more about it later on. Yeah. I was all in on Seven Banks last year and then he let me down, but the tools are there, but he was just slow. So, you know what I mean? He wasn't fully up to speed with the college game in a starting role. So I think he could show some growth. But yeah, I'm just really not that, you know, bullish on that secondary.
Okay, number two, Jermaine Lowell. I don't know how to pronounce that. Lowell.
I've heard it. I think it's Lole. I think that's okay. How I've heard it pronounced, but I've heard people all over the map on it.
So probably one of the most fun watches is this kid, because he's like a bowling ball, but with like crazy change of direction traits. Like he's just like in and out of his cut so quickly, and he gets around guards. Obviously, you know, the guards aren't like special athletes, but like you could really see him. And he's crafty too, like using that change of direction, but using his hands well. Big fan of this guy. I think not a lot of people know him. I didn't really know about him that much either. So I'm a fan of this guy.
Yeah, I was so excited to watch. And when I found out the Pac-12 was coming back last year, he was the number one guy. I was like, I'm so excited, outside of Greg Allen, Chase Garbers, and Keaton Slovis, outside of the quarterbacks. Jermaine Lole, I was so excited to watch him because they tweaked their scheme on defense, and they moved him from the edge to the interior. And he did play that kind of versatile role in 2019, but he was so much better on the interior. Like, he was not meant to be out playing defensive end, much better on the interior. And his production went along with it. I mean, that you saw that in the grades. If you split up those reps of 2019, so isolating it in 2020, matched it. I mean, he was producing at an extremely high level. And you know, he had some pretty good matchups too. I mean, the Pac-12 has some pretty good offensive linemen. I would say that that's their conference's strength. But you know, it'll be interesting to see kind of what that entire Arizona State team does. You know, Jaden Daniels, we talked ad nauseum about. You know, we're just not fully believers in that. You know, him really executing that offense. But I think Jermaine Lole, they have a pretty good outside cornerback duo too with Chase Lucas and Chad Jones. You know, they were up there. We have our outside cornerback rankings over at pff.com too. Just missed the cut, but, you know, really like those guys as well. So some interesting pieces there, but Jermaine Lole, best player on the team by far.
Number three, Dante Stills, West Virginia. Another point I want to make when it comes to like interior, like the pass rush versus pass protection stuff that I've been talking about, is what you see a lot of is like when you're having these teams play like tight fronts or playing like 3-4 fronts where you have a nose and you have like the two tackles, I guess like defensive ends, but now they're like four techniques or four eye techniques inside the tackles. And, you know, you think, okay, well, we can handle this, but sometimes what happens, you see it on Dante Stills' tape a lot, is the tackles are now oversetting. So Stills is thinking like, okay, if I'm a pass rusher from a 4-eye alignment and I don't have, an outside linebacker, an edge guy outside of me who's also rushing. So his role is now to play it kind of B gap all the way outside to like a contained type of situation. And so you don't get a lot, you honestly don't see a lot of production from 4-eyes because it's really tough to really like kind of like run the hoop from an interior alignment and then get all the way outside and get to the quarterback. But what happens is these tackles tend to overset sometimes. And all of a sudden there's this big gap. So like he's trying to get outside, but all of a sudden there's this big gap inside of him because the guard maybe has to deal with the nose, or the guard doesn't get enough of a set. And all of a sudden you just like quick inside move and you're into the quarterback. You saw that with Dante Stills. You saw that against, I can't stop remembering this, but you saw that against Mike Leach's Mississippi State team a lot. That's how they were getting pressured all the time last season. So yeah, this is something that popped as I was watching these D linemen, just something that popped in my head. Like, you shouldn't be able to get a lot of pass rush from a tight front, really. But you're seeing it because, you know, tackles are sometimes overset and you're getting that inside move from the 4-eye, which really shouldn't be there, but it is. Anyways, your thoughts on Dante Stills?
Yeah, I mean, those are very good points to make. But with Dante, you know, it was interesting because Darius Stills, I think I don't know if he did win Big 12 Defensive Player of the Year by the media. And I think that was the case. I could be wrong. Someone call me out if I am. And then Dante Stills didn't make either the first or second team. I thought Dante was better than Darius. And that's just like to Darius. I thought he was a good player, but I thought Dante, you know, what he did again in the run game, he did not get moved. I mean, he just legitimately mauled in the run game. And he was up there with Lee McNeil, you know, one of the most explosive, you know, interior defenders in college football last year, now with the Detroit Lions, formerly of NC State, in run defensive grade. You know, when you rank top 10 and negatively graded and positive graded play rate against the run, I mean, you're doing something special there. And that's what I really like about Dante. And that's what put him really there in the top three.
West Virginia, are they going to do it for us this year?
No, they're not. I'm done. I like Jerry Deggy. You know, he's a tier three quarterback in our quarterback rankings. I think he was like 27, somewhere in that area. In tier three, the good, not great. That's exactly what he is. And I think we found that out, but he did flash he was higher up in that tier three because he flashed a little bit more advanced skill set at times. There's just not enough pieces on offense, man. There's just not. I think Wright, good wide receiver. There's some intriguing pieces still in the secondary, despite losing Tyke Smith and Drayshon Miller. Nick Troy Fortune, he's the leader of that group at corner. Good safeties as well. So, you know, Joshua Chandler, off-ball linebacker. There's a lot of good players there. I think that defense is going to be good. But the offense is scary again. I think they're just going to be, again, that, you know, seven and, you know, just above 500 team. You know, they're a seven-win team. I think that's their ceiling, and I think their floor is six wins. I think they're just the definition of a good, not great, and a little bit above average college football team. But I still think Jerry Deggy is getting overrated or underrated. I will say,
yeah, I mean, like, he can pull the whole team up. Like, this is a team that like needed him to be like super, like elite. Well, not needed him, but like if he was the player that we thought he would develop into last season, based on his like, now looking back, his limited 2019 sample, but you know, he was really good in that small sample. If he was that player that we thought he was going to be last year with the pieces that they had, like, man, they could have made a real run at the Big 12 title game and won the Big 12 title. Like, there's no doubt in my mind if he had played that well. And now this year, you know, they lose players. So it's like he needs to be that player or else it's really not, could not be a great season there in Morgantown. All right. Number four, interior defensive lineman, Jalen Redmond, Oklahoma, kind of guy I talked about a bit before, really good three technique, you know, put him at three tech, let him rush the passer. And he's a pretty good player. He's a really good player.
Yeah. 100%. And he's another one too, just the opt outs that people forget about. You know, you think like, oh, they lost Ronnie Perkins. Nick Benito was a very underrated player in that group. Like, maybe that defense is going to slip a little bit. Like, no, you return Jalen Redmond, who's, again, a top five interior defensive lineman in college football. You know, this isn't, you know, I alluded to it earlier. This isn't the cream of the crop of what we've seen in past years as far as returners go. Not a lot of, you know, standout returners. And we'll hit them with the next few players because they're a little bit more high upside, less proven guys. But Jalen Redmond, he's proven it. You know, we saw that in his breakout year back in 2019. Just his second year, I believe, on campus. You know, he had 83.3 run defense grade, 76.3 pass rusher. And what I really liked about him is that when he had, you know, those one-on-one opportunities, so, you know, we talk about, you know, true pass sets, same thing with true pass rushes. you know, you look at those, obvious passing down situations, what he could do. And he was dominant. And I think he has so much more room to grow. And I think he could eventually become, you know, one of those, maybe a Haskell Garrett type of player. We'll see.
I agree 100%. I'm into that. I think he's got good hands. I think he's got good explosiveness. I think he can really be a complete player like Haskell Garrett should be. All right. Number five, Brian Brzee from Clemson. True freshman season was really good. So I think if anyone is going to make like the jump to another level and could be like the number one player, and probably already should be the number one player in like going into the 2022 season, it's going to be this guy from Clemson, like the perfect body to get to play three technique. And he's so young last year and played at such a high level as a true freshman. He's going to be great this year.
Yeah, I mean, he's like, it wasn't consistent, but 6'5", 300 pounds. If you had finished the year with an 81.2 pass rush grade as a true freshman on the interior, it's not common. I don't know where that, I don't have that in front of me where that stacks up against other true freshmen. I need to take a look at that, but I can guarantee you it's up there with the best, might even be the best, but don't take my word for that. But he was a truly special pass rusher for given the experience. Number one overall recruit in the 2020 class. And there's some, I mean, this Clemson defense, man, it's going to be good. Even though they did lose some key pieces that we talked about Mike Jones earlier, they don't have Darion Kendrick, but they're going to have, and they just have so many high upside players. And I almost want to throw it in there with like a Georgia, you know, just a lot of, you know, young, raw, but so, you know, high ceiling players. And that's why it makes them so alluring and, you know, kind of the unknown nature of the 2021 season. You know, can these players really maximize potential? Brian's one of those players.
Okay, so that's the top five, and then we'll run through the rest of the top 10. Kobe Whiteside from Missouri at 6. Khadijah Kansi, Pittsburgh at 7. Ben Still, Nebraska at 8. Fedarian Mathis, number 9, Alabama. Keenan Stewart, number 10, UTEP. And Keanu Benton, Wisconsin, number 11. Your thoughts?
Yeah, Kobe Whiteside, that's my guy. That is my guy. This past season, injury kind of robbed us of like the true Kobe Whiteside, but you go back to his past year's production and you look at what he did. I mean, even to this past season, what we did, you know, to start the season when he was healthy against Alabama and Tennessee. I mean, he was productive, 17% pass rush win rate, 76.4 pass rush grade. And then go back to, you know, back in 2019 for the production he had playing nose tackle. Well, it was truly off the charts, especially for an SEC nose tackle. It was up there with guys like Jeffrey Simmons and Javon Kinlaw as far as PFF college era goes from the SEC. I mean, those are good NFL players now. Those are highly thought of first round picks. And I think Kobe Whiteside, the 310 pounder, I think he has the traits to really get there. I mean, I think he has power. He shoots off the line. I'm really excited to see what he can do fully healthy. I mean, it's just kind of a shame the rest of the Missouri defense has kind of fallen apart, you know, around him. There's just really not a, you know, appealing talent outside of there. Especially, you know, I'm talking ahead of ourselves. We'll probably preview some stuff later on, but you know, the cornerbacks, you know, the rest of the pass rushers, Nick Bolton's now onto the NFL as well. But you know, Kobe Whiteside, there's a lot to be excited about with him and also with the offense too. You know, we've talked too about Connor Bazelak. We're excited about what he does, you know, with Eli Drinkwitz. So Missouri, I think they're coming back. They're going to bounce back.
All right. So there you go. Those are the top 10 interior defensive linemen. And before we finish up, people, I have to address this because people are not happy with the fact that I didn't rank Ryan Day in the top 20 of my coach rankings. So I'll just address it really quickly and then I'll just, you know, so you guys understand what's going on. So basically,
Seth, I think you're muted.
So yeah, that's pretty much why I didn't have Ryan Day in the top 20. And if you have any questions, just hit me up in Twitter or Instagram, like a lot of you people are doing already, or Facebook, like some of you people are doing. So let me know if you have any questions about that. All right, there you have it. That was the PFF College Football Podcast with myself, Dustin Crum, and Anthony Trash. Hope you liked it, and we will see you in a week.